From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. The voice of reason is TNT's John Matlin. The John Matlin Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Some have called me the most reasonable voice of all time. To them, I say nonsense. I am but just a man. Welcome to the show, November 19th, 2022. As always, time keeps ticking by. I'm always positive, no matter what the outlook. We're all here. We all have our purpose. And our purpose, if you're awake, is to kick butt, take names, and never stop bringing truth and freedom forward to the forefront. So let's jump right into it. Our first guest today is originally from New York City. Dr. Stephen Soloway completed undergraduate studies at Stony Brook University. He attended the American University of the Caribbean School of Medicine, Montserrat, British West Indies, London, England, Boston, Massachusetts, Omaha, New England, with a postgraduate training at Mercy Catholic Medical Center. I'll have him say it when he gets on. Hospital Division, both in Philadelphia. Medical College of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia Veterans Administration Medical Center, St. Christopher's Hospital for Children. Dr. Soloway's devotion to patients needs have earned him the top doctor awards every year since 03 when I graduated high school. And he is regarded as one of the leaders in Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware area for rheumatologic care. Dr. Soloway, welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you, John, for having me. That was a wonderful introduction.
I try my hardest. I mean, I've been told when I was in the medical field that I only got patients' last names wrong like 4% of the time, and 4% of the time ain't bad.
Well, the good news is that most doctors now have the same last name, and you can't understand them, so you'd probably be at a higher percentage of correction, of being correct.
There you go. So your book is Medical Politics, How to Protect Yourself from Bad Doctors, Insurance Companies, and Big Government. So you've definitely witnessed a lot in your time in the field. And I think everybody has at this point with what we've seen with COVID. So let's just dive right in. Tell us about some of the malpractice issues that we see. And actually, you know what? We'll put a tack in that. Let's start with legislation and how insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies run the show there.
So this you put out a lot of good question, a lot of thought provocation. I'm going to try to link it together for you. The most people are walking around thinking, you know, the United States, we have freedom of speech. And then they realize when they're censored from YouTube and Google, they don't have freedom of speech. So the government has given those other platforms the ability to censor you. So medicine is the same. Due to the far left overreaching government, you can't just pick your doctor, go and get a prescription. You can't just go and get an x-ray. Your doctor almost doesn't count. He's a pawn. He's employed by a facility. He has 15 minutes or she has 15 minutes to see you. Get all the data typed in the computer, which, by the way, that's how they get paid. It's not how much time or quality they spend with you. So if they assume or determine or anything that you need something, the legislative people have decided, nope, sorry, you're going to have to go through an appeal process and get a pre-authorization, even though the doctor has already signed off on the prescription or the x-ray or CAT scan or whatever test the doctor deems necessary. Now, so you go to medical school, you get your medical degree, then you do your training in your field, and then you get your state license. Once you have your license and you sign that prescription, you're responsible. So you're the one who's going to get sued if you mess up. Yet now you have a bureaucratic body telling you, hey, no, that drug's not on our formulary. It costs too much. Or that drug, you know, we don't really like it. We consider it experimental. If you have a condition that is not a mainstream condition, so if you have rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, there's so many millions, we think that you're allowed to take this maybe. But if you have a weird condition, say something called relapsing polychondritis, and there's not enough people to have done clinical trials, you have to just do what your training and what your expertise and what your gut tells you. but you're not allowed. So you might be saying to a patient with a rare disease, I'm sorry, you know, this is what you need. I've seen it work, but you're not allowed to get it because your insurance has denied it. And they denied it because they deem it experimental, yet there's nothing available for your condition. So this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with bureaucrats, absolutely, you know, setting all the rules. They are paying hospital systems. Have you noticed the hospital systems are growing and the private offices are shrinking? And this is because they're taking the new trainees. They're actually under training them. I don't know how they pulled this off. My daughter is a medical resident now. And when she finishes her 3 years, which will be in 5 months, she'll know about 10% of what I learned in the same 3 years I did 35 years ago. And it's really sad to see. They don't start IVs. They don't put in catheters. They don't do anything practical. They're just not allowed. Okay. So the training has become weak and they're all told, you know, you just stick around and work for the hospital 9 to 5 and we'll give you $100,000 a year and, you know, you'll have a great life and you don't have to worry about anything and you can have your 2 weeks vacation and so on and so forth. This is terrible. The thinking and the innovative doctor has disappeared. So now you come to somebody like myself who's self-employed. If I need to spend 3 hours with you to get to the bottom of the problem, then I'll spend 3 hours with you. And if I need to get you a medication, I will pick up the phone and I will call the director of your insurance company and I will demand and argue and bring in legal and compliance officers until we win the battle, as long as I prove that I'm making sense and not just throwing money in a shredder, which is really what they do, except the shredder is their pocket. So every year, the medical offices, I'm sorry, every year as a patient, you get a notice that your premium went up 10%. Well, every year as a doctor, you get a notice that Medicare's rates for a visit went down by 1%. So this is the 18th year in a row that Medicare dropped their reimbursement to a doctor. So you can imagine that, you know, I'm going to keep rolling with this because it's flowing good, but I know you're going to get to a break. But there's 100 million people that are insured by Medicare, Medicaid. There's 200 million people that have some form of private insurance. That's 300 out of 330 million. So that's a 90% rate. So there's about 15 million people who are on VA insurance, except they're also on Medicare. And what those people do, I mean, I give them credit. They've learned how to beat the system. They find a private guy in practice like me, and they use their private insurance. And then they take their prescription and go to the VA, where they'll give you anything for no reason whatsoever because there's no oversight at all. I mean, that place is literally a rummage sale. I could tell you stories about that, but we would need 15 shows to go over it. We probably need a TV show.
We sure would.
So you're down to 30 million people that have no insurance, except of those 300 million people insured, 15 million of them have two insurances, both provided by the government. Well, why don't you take 15 million of those people? Why don't you take 15 million people that have two insurances, leave them with one, and give 15 million uninsured people the other? And then for the 15 million people or 5% left over, instead of passing out free insurance to everybody pouring across the southern border, why don't we just insure our own kind?
Yeah. I mean, you said something very interesting about what you see right now with doctors that are learning and coming out of school, out of residency. And I was an imaging technologist for 18 years. I lost my career due to the COVID vaccine. I didn't comply. They didn't accept my religious exemption. And I can tell you, over those 18 years, each year that passed, every new doctor seemed to know less. And to the point that the last few weeks that I was there, I went to do a J-tube placement bedside on a vented patient. So we had gastro, for the listeners that don't understand what that is, that has a high atomic number. It absorbs radiation. That way, when we take an x-ray in the bed, you can see if the tube that's going into the jejunum, which is part of the stomach, part of the small bowel, shall I say, that it's in the right place. And one of the doctors, one of the residents came in, looked at the image and said, "What do you think?" And I said, "What do you mean, what do I think?" And
he said, "You're the doctor."
Yeah, he goes, because you know, we're not supposed to make, I could tell that it was in perfectly, but I'm not supposed to make any diagnosis, and nor would I even dare to, because if something went wrong, they'd say the x-ray tech told me it was okay. So,
John, you're 100% spot on. The people, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, get on this show to be hated by everyone, but I will tell you that the quality of what is being produced each year, whether it's by accident or on purpose, is deplorable. What you just described is the norm, and it does get worse by the minute. It's getting worse faster and faster. I mean, you want to hear, okay, you're a medical guy. You want to hear a medical story?
Absolutely. I mean, the general public needs this, doc. They, you know, I've always heard Western medicine is the best, and the doctors know everything, and the medical thing is perfect. And I'm like, it's not that simple. So yes, I'd love to hear the story.
So I've been out of medical school now, and I don't want you to think I'm old, but I graduated medical school 35 years ago. And after selling hot dogs for 35 years, I opened my practice yesterday. No, I'm kidding. So that was a joke.
I know, I'm laughing. I had coffee in my mouth, though. I almost died.
All right, good, good. So here, get this. I'm literally in my office one day seeing patients. I get a call from a doctor who needs me on the phone urgently because he's in the operating room. And so I get on the phone. He says, hey, I need your advice. I said, yeah, what's up? He says, well, I'm here in the operating room and there's a patient with lupus on the table. I opened her up and she had the largest spleen I've ever seen. I took it out. He said, you know, what can I do? I said, well, you better put it back because they're going to die in about 15 minutes, which they did. Because for those who don't know, you know, the spleen is holding blood. And if the spleen is too large, it means that there's a lot of blood there. This was a lupus patient, and had I been called prior to the surgery, most of us know that short of an upset stomach from curdled milk, most causes of abdominal pain bad enough to get to an operating room in lupus are either inflammation of blood vessels or so-called arteritis or vasculitis, and the other one is called peritonitis, which is when the lining of the gut gets inflamed. Both respond very well to like one shot of steroid, prednisone, methylprednisolone, whatever your favorite one is. So this person, had I been called prior, would not have gone to the emergency room. Instead, they were murdered. I call it a murder because, you know, where did the lack of thinking come in to take a lupus patient to an operating room without calling a rheumatologist first? I just don't understand the utter stupidity that went into that process.
That's awful.
You know, I can tell you that I've seen people, and by the way, I've patented 3 needles, okay? And I am an expert at injecting, among other things, carpal tunnels and trigger fingers. Well, when a patient has carpal tunnel, and we don't have to go into the details of what it is, I'll just tell you the story. When a patient has carpal tunnel, the premise is that there's a nerve that's, let's say, trapped, and the surgery is to remove a ligament or a band that's on top of the nerve. And then once the surgery is over, in theory, the patient's cured. Until you find out the reason the person had a problem with the nerve is the area around the nerve was inflamed, such as an arthritic condition, maybe lupus, maybe rheumatoid arthritis, maybe gout. Well, if the patient gets the surgery and they're worse, and then I hear the patient say, I'm scheduled to get it done again, I immediately literally want to jump out the window because I say, and I look at my medical assistant who's been with me 25 years and I say, here we go again. This is unbelievable. How are you going to remove a ligament that was taken out? They're going to try and remove scar tissue so it grows back faster. And they still didn't address the underlying disease that caused the damn nerve to be irritated in the first place. You know, not everyone's a typist that needs carpal tunnel surgery. Most people have some arthritic condition and need to be controlled. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And then diabetics get ischemic nerves. They don't get enough power or juice, like in their electric socket, if you want to call it that. So the nerve doesn't have enough energy to get to the end of the hand. Well, if you take away the covering of the protection of the nerve and you still have a nerve that doesn't have enough juice, how did you help that person? Now you put a scar on top of a poorly functioning nerve. I mean, I could go on with this literally all
day. I was just going to say, you could totally go on with this all day. It is absolutely mind-boggling, having been in that field for so long and witnessed some of the things I have. And I mean, I've witnessed so many crazy things, from doctors coming in that specialize in kidney stone removal, and they look at the CAT scan and they can't find the stone. And
I don't want to interrupt you, but you got to hear this. Here's the best. Workers' comp doctor was out of town. You know who saw the patients for him? His two sons that were lawyers. I can't make it up. Started saying that, I said, I got to get this one out there. So yeah, there were two lawyers seeing patients, doing injections, the whole bit.
Oh my, they actually were rendering treatment.
No, actually, they actually ran the office. They had seen enough where they could BS enough to get through the day, and they could still rob the workers' comp is a way to get rich. If somebody wants to reform anything, they ought to reform the workers' comp system, because if you bill for a hangnail $10,000, you'll probably get paid $11,000. With Medicare, you can bill a dollar, you might get a penny.
Yeah. I mean, regular private insurance. If I go for my yearly physical, and my doctor's great, love him. I think he's an excellent doctor. I've been with him since I was 18. Phenomenal doctor. And, you know, they'll put out the bill and I look at what the insurance companies refund or
30% maybe.
Yeah. It's, and I'm like, wow, he made almost nothing on my visit. And I'm like, this is crazy. And that's what you say. Like, the private offices have become owned by all of these big health systems. And that's what they were a community practice of three doctors. Now there's two doctors and they've gone through different big names here in the city, from NYU. Now they're back with my enemy Northwell, who fired me. So, I mean, you've seen, you know, the change over to that. Yes, yeah, so I don't move, Doc. I could tell you that. But let us take a quick break. We'll come back for some more good conversation right after this here on TNTRadio.live.
Politically incorrect on TNT Radio.
So, Dr. Rose, the spike protein that's in this coronavirus or COVID, they call it a vaccine, I don't, I call it an injection. What's the take on that, and where's it taking the population of the world at large?
It's brand new technology, and it is technology, mRNA transfection technology, which in my opinion excludes it from being called a vaccine, absolutely, because it doesn't inoculate you against a virus, for example, in the traditional sense. The cationic lipids, on the other hand, each of the Pfizer and Moderna products uses their own, and these are highly toxic. This is not a secret. There are peer-reviewed publications out the yin-yang showing the toxicity of cationic lipids. The one used in the Moderna recipe, called SM102, when you compare it to gasoline, for example, from a safety data sheet point of view, it's actually got a worse profile for health.
Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
In times of fear, World Vision has been there for the most vulnerable. For the last 70 years, we've stood with kids and families during some of the world's hardest times. Through natural disasters, war, and disease, delivering life-saving aid and support, helping rebuild lives, and empowering entire communities to lift themselves out of poverty. And we're doing the same today. Because rising to these challenges is in our DNA. And with every act of courage, faith, and love, at home and abroad, we do more than just stop the spread of fear. We replace it with hope. Learn more at worldvision.org.
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
I would like a cut, Alex, over there in the booth. I'd like a cut of that says the voice of freedom, John Matlin. But we are back here with Dr. Stephen Soloway, and we're having great conversation about all things medical right now. And I'm going to jump into the fact that, as I said, I was an imaging technologist for 18 years, and I watched some, imaging technology for 15 years, in the field for 18, and watching the things that occurred, you know, as I worked through the ER at those times, you know, you see some crazy things. And I watched from doctors being able to know or hypothesize what the ailment was to doctors by the next 15 years later, have a checklist, and there would be a CAT scan issued, an X-ray issued. Sometimes they would order a CAT scan on the same thing that they ordered an X-ray on, and if the CAT scan was done, there'd be no point to even do the X-ray. But they have a checklist, and if, am I correct by saying that the way that care is basically dispensed at this point is a checklist that comes from the governing body of the hospital or that doctor's office?
So what you've just said in three words is we have socialized medicine, and you're right, and there is a checklist, and that's why the doctor will no longer make face-to-face interaction with you. They will stare at the computer, and if they don't go down the checklist, they're going to get fired. If they get fired, you're going to get somebody who knows even less because they don't even know how to push the button to make the checklist. The problem is the checklist usually doesn't apply, because once you get rid of the innovative thinker, the checklist becomes irrelevant. The checklist is like the speed limit. You're going, okay, the speed limit's whatever, 60 miles an hour. Well, if you're driving 62 in the snow, you're an idiot. And if you're driving 30 in the sun, I'd say there's something wrong with your car. There's no difference on this checklist. The checklist wants to know, when's the last time you had your menstrual cycle, even if you're a man, and they're still asking you the same freaking question. I mean, now, you know, the whole transgender, that's another thing I'd love to talk to you for 4 hours about. But you see, you are right. Everything is a checklist. Now, back when I was a trainee, probably back when you said you graduated high school when I started this and that.
Yeah, but, so I'm born in the class of 85. I like to call it the class of 85.
I think I graduated med school in 88, but be that as it may, we really loved what we did. We were given the freedom to think and explore while we had professors over our shoulder telling us, no, 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 or good job. And we'd sit down in the morning and we would discuss all the cases. None of that exists anymore. Now, I was on the phone with a doctor about 3 months ago discussing a case. This is no lie. Very, very sick case at the hospital. Again, I was at the office. I got the phone call and we're discussing the case. And at 5:02 p.m., the lady says, the lady meaning the doctor at the hospital, says, sir, to me, sir, I'm now on mommy time. Doctor time is over. I said, who am I going to discuss the case with if you're the doctor on the case? She said, well, whoever comes on after me. I said, but they're not going to know the case. And she said, I'm sorry. And she hung up.
Wow.
This is what you're getting. If you don't have an advocate, you might as well. You know, when I grew up in Corona, Queens, I thought that was dangerous. No, you know what? It's more dangerous to be a patient. And by the way, I don't know if you read my first book, Bad Medicine, The Horrors of American Healthcare. I wrote my story of a 10-day admission that became 6 months because of mistakes, given the wrong drug, given medicines I didn't need. And they told me, oh, if you weren't a well-conditioned swimmer before you came in, you would have been dead. I said, I don't know how I'm not dead. I think I am dead.
Wow. I mean, this stuff is, you talked about people meeting, doctors meeting and discussing cases early in the day. So what they still do at hospitals that I've worked at and whatnot, they still kind of do that to some degree, but I'm sure it's not the way that it was done years ago because of all of the thousands of reasons that we have just mentioned. But let's kind of shift gears. So with COVID, with the COVID shots that occurred, I witnessed something that was absolute. I mean, we've all witnessed in some way something that was completely mind-numbing and mind-blowing. But what happened was I immediately stood up against the idea of mandatory PCR testing for the unvaccinated because it was scientifically flawed. I trust the science. That's kind of what I do. But the science was flawed, and it was I was wildly obvious. So I said that that makes no sense, and I responded to the email that was issued to the entire the entire Northwell system. And I said that I will not take that PCR test because it doesn't actually bring down infection if we're not also testing the vaccinated. So I didn't want to take the PCR test. I thought that was nonsense at that point in time in August of 2021. And it was not needed. It was going to be in the community. There was already vaccines out there for people that want. And I saw the painting on the wall was, this is going to lead to vaccination. So I painted them a problem because I put them in a corner and I sent this whole entire email that I sent to the CEO. I CC'd the media on it. This is where the journey really began for me. And I said, if we are here to raise health, as Northwell proclaims, we need to be able to stop infection at all costs. And I put all the scientific articles of all the people, the hospitals that were in California, that 90% of the people, of the 400 people that tested positive, were vaccinated. And I said, we have to test everybody. That becomes money. They don't want to test everybody. So I was putting them in a corner as to, if you're going to use science as your guise, you've been exposed. And they tried not to answer it until the media answered that email. And I was on New York One here in the five boroughs, and the rest is history as to where it went. But those meetings in the morning, Doc, that we were talking about, became how they can stop basically the resistance that was forming. So I started a group called The Resistance on Telegram, and they were, nice. Of course, they found a way to infiltrate. And what they did in those meetings, instead of seemingly talking about patients, I'm sure they did that too, they were putting up stuff about what we were talking about, the healthcare workers that didn't want to get vaccinated, that didn't want to do the PCR testing. And I think that at this point in time, that might have been more effective than the meetings that we have now.
John, the meetings that we have now are meaningless. And you mentioned a couple of things about COVID and the vaccine. And, you know, you alluded to essentially, you know, how things were not really handled properly. So there's two things in my mind as a practicing physician that were appalling. The most appalling issue is that, I mean, anybody who is a physician who was trained properly, who knows anything, would know that after a given amount of time on a ventilator, you have to have a trach, because if you don't get a trach, the tube that's placed down your throat into your lung to help you breathe through a machine will essentially become a barnacle at the bottom of the ship, and it won't be removable, and you're going to die on that machine. And people were knowingly left on machines for well more than the acceptable amount of time. Now, when I trained, I thought the acceptable amount of time was 7 to 10 days. I've spoken to some lung colleagues who say you can go out 2 weeks or so, but there were people on ventilators 3 months who never had a tracheostomy. Those people were basically murdered. So there was poor care. Who was dictating the care? I don't know. Every hospital system probably had their own SS guard, you know, who told you what to do. And you can't talk obedience to authority, because then you're going to get fired for breaking some political correct value system, and you know, you'll be accused of offending somebody and looking gawking, stalking, or whatever they accuse you of these days. So that's one thing. The second thing, the big problem I have was with the mask. People don't know that the COVID virus, the so-called viron, the particle, is 0.9 microns, okay? Did you know that an N95 is meant to keep out particles that are 3 microns or larger, 95% of them? So you explain to me this. How is it that a mask can keep out something that is 3 units, just in case people don't want to think about microns, let's just say 3 inches, okay? So a mask can keep out a bug that's 3 inches, but you're coming along with a bug that's less than 1 inch. Now, that doesn't work. Now, the naysayers, the people that think I'm crazy, they're going to cite data that says the tiny one, the viron, oh, it has to be attached to, like in football, it needs to be attached to its blocking running back to get through. Well, that's not 100% true. It's, you know, it may be partially true, and it may occur, and it may be true sometimes. But I will tell you for a fact, when COVID first came out, when the Chinese first attacked us with COVID, and nobody would acknowledge this fact, we were wearing in my office N95s times 2. We were wearing rubber gloves, masks, the helmets, the face shield. We were wearing these gowns and everything. We were wearing this, and every one of us got so sick that we had to shut the office for 4 to 6 weeks because, I mean, literally, like myself, I went home and started taking steroids and anticoagulants, and I said, I'll take my chances at home because they're going to kill me, because if I go to the hospital, I'm going on a ventilator and I'll die. This is no lie. And, you know, we all made it back. After that, you know, whatever the guidelines were, which I think are unfounded and unconstitutional to institute this mask mandate, because, I mean, the only thing a mask mandate is good for is really if you want to rob a bank and get away with it or something, because prior to the COVID thing, you couldn't wear a mask in any of the local banks because, you know, it was considered dangerous. Now, all of a sudden, you have to wear a mask to protect a virus that's too small to be protected by the mask. So this system is so upside down, backwards and sideways. That's where you got to get to the politician and say, you know, well, if Dr. Soloway knows any of this, how come Dr. Fauci doesn't know all of this? Where's the leadership going on here? You know, why is it that, you know, I was told by one of the guys who developed the messenger RNA technology, I was told 2 years ago, within 12 months, we're going to have an HIV vaccine. It'll be a DNA vaccine. We're going to have a Lyme vaccine. It's going to work really good. Well, none of that ever came to fruition. And I raised the question, as many people have, you know, what is the safety of a DNA vaccine where you can actually change your DNA? And I was assured, you know, quote unquote, that it can't happen. But there's many things in the learning curve that people don't know at the beginning, no matter what it is. And you can use anything you want. You can use diesel fuel, fumes, you can use coal, you know, the cancer risks of everything. Well, it seems pretty important to know that there are people out there who've had COVID or the vaccine, and it probably worked for some of them. And for others, they got blood clots and died, and other ones laid in the hospital and were murdered. And they weren't murdered on purpose. They were murdered because of people that are flat out not able to think. They're not allowed. You know, you're in socialism when you're not allowed to think. So everyone needs to have a doctor that works for themselves who can actually think. And if you want to go over and spend an extra 15 minutes and interview the family and do whatever you got to do to get to the answer, isn't that why you're paying the doctor, for God's sake?
Yeah. I mean, there was one doctor somewhere in the city, and I remember right in the beginning, he came out and said, I have a problem venting patients because they're presenting as if they have acute respiratory distress syndrome. However, it's this paradigm. It's not what's happening. And if it was my loved one, I wouldn't vent them. And they said, oh, you won't vent them. Well, they put them on desk duty. And that was it. I'm like, this is somebody that's literally coming forward and being innovative, having that discussion. And in the end, he was wildly right. By August of 2021, people were coming in with pulse oxes of 87. And they were like, all right, well, you'll probably be better in 2 days. That person, I guarantee you, would have been vented March of 2020. Because I witnessed
you're
so many people.
You're 100% right. Yeah, you're right. 100%.
Yeah, and we know how a lot of that ended. But this is that issue where whatever the system says, whatever the NIH says, and the CDC says, the system will repeat. And if you deviate, you're put on desk duty, or you lose your job. You're not allowed to speak. They'll have meetings to make sure that your message doesn't get out. It's really, really wild times in healthcare, and so many people, and this is why having these types of conversations help wake people up, is so many people just default to, it's medicine. It's safe and effective. Now, if we want to talk about what mRNA can do, what I think it proved to me, that it was able to help make the body create these spikes, I see it as a very good possibility that they can use mRNA to help people that have cystic fibrosis. I lost a friend to cystic fibrosis. And if you can have the body stop producing the mucus that clogs everything, well, now we're talking about a completely all new world. But when it comes to something like a virus that they know changes so much, we just had this conversation about masks. We just had it. You got sick. Everybody was using it. Somehow, I did not get COVID until Omicron. And I mean, that to me is mind-blowing, because, you know, I felt like, oh, I have some safety in my N95 painter's mask that I got my hands on. But I went out there every day during the height, and I somehow didn't get it. And granted, right after I lost my job, I said, let me check my antibodies. And the insurance company decided they wouldn't pay for that because it was unneeded for me to know if I had antibodies at that time. Yeah, it's, but you know what I'm saying? How did I not get it until Omicron came out? And did Omicron, if you ask me, Doc, and again, I am not a scientist by any means, when you have a vaccine that doesn't sterilize, the only way the virus can continue to replicate is to evolve and find a way around that defense. And maybe that's why those spikes change to that level. Is that a possibility?
Sure. Yeah, you know, the whole science came on so fast that it's very difficult, you know, within a short window of time of say 3 to 5 years to know anything. The repercussions of this virus are going to go on for 15 to 30 years just financially alone. And the kids who were locked up, not in school for a year, they're going to have mental problems forever. And, you know, talking about viruses and messenger RNA and whatnot, it's going to be 10 years from now before people truly understand what the actual actions and reactions have been. It's a very scary time. And the Chinese, I hate to keep coming back to those Chinese, but they did say the next war is going to be fought with chemical and biologic weapons. I hope our lasers might be able to stop them. But, you know, I'm not trying to not answer your question, but this question is so broad that everything you said is correct and I agree with you. But the real answer is nobody knows the right answer. And if they come out with a definitive statement, they're lying.
Correct. And that was exactly, you actually answered my question. And many people's questions or validated them when they came out and said, trust the science, this is the shot, it's safe and effective, and it will stop everybody from getting sick. And we knew that within a couple weeks that people were still getting sick. And then we watched it wane. I mean, I tell people all the time, we're not all psychics. We simply took a second to not just regurgitate what we heard on the news. But we'll take a quick break. We will be back with Dr. Stephen Soloway right after these messages.
The midterms and America has voted. With his expert analysis, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Here we go again. A week and a half after the 2022 midterms, 7 congressional districts have us singing Wake Me Up Before November Ends. This is an absolutely absurd situation with districts not counting their ballots in a timely fashion. They should be done on election night. The entire state of Florida was counted and recorded on election night. Most of the country was counted and recorded on election night. But no, in these 7 districts, they have to find more Democrat ballots. See, it's all about ballots with the Democrats. They count ballots and they count ballots and they count ballots until miraculously there are enough votes for them to win. We need to put an end to this. We need to put an end to this now. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Hi, Australia. There's never been a better time to check up on your health. We have a world-class healthcare system that's easy to access, even when you can't be there in person. Telehealth enables you to catch up with your GP or health professional, and the Australian government has now made it permanently available through Medicare. Show your health some love, face-to-face, by phone or video call. Care for your health. Find out more at australia.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
When you need to know what's going on around the world and at home, keep it on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We are back with Dr. Stephen Soloway. All right, Doc, so we have so much going on. Real quick, I want to ask, because there's people that are listening to this, you're a rheumatologist. How did you see the COVID vaccines affecting patients that suffer from rheumatoid arthritis?
Believe it or not, when we were open and none of the staff were sick, we continued treating patients for their rheumatoid arthritis. It was my premise and or thought process that if we were to allow people to have their diseases flare, that they simply wouldn't be healthy enough to fight any virus, let alone COVID. So I honestly, you know, I had a lot of patients that were rightly so scared. They were scared to come in. They were scared to leave their house. They were scared to get treatment. But the majority, let's say 70% of the patients that I was treating, so 700 out of 1,000 people, they came, they were treated, they did the right stuff, and they fared well. And probably the one who fared the worst well was me, because I was sick so much for so long. But honestly, we were very lucky on that one. And by the way, that takes into account either vaccinated or non-vaccinated people. So I couldn't break down for you. I don't know what percentage of vaccinated people did better or worse than unvaccinated people. I just know that people who stayed on medication for chronic illness fared very well in my experience.
Got it. So my question was more aimed toward, is there a negative effect associated with the COVID-19 vaccinations for patients already, since they have that immune disorder?
Yeah. So there's clearly a thrombosis effect. It's recognized that people are thrombogenic. They're prone to getting pulmonary embolus. There's no question. That's probably the biggest offender. And, you know, recognizing one large offender, you can list 2,000 other things like a Tylenol package insert, and you can probably lump everything on the list. But the one that's killing people is the thrombosis that they're getting after the vaccine or after the disease. And they don't know why they're just dropping dead in the street from being unable to breathe. It's because they're having pulmonary embolus. And this has become kind of rampant, which is why when I had the illness at home, I quickly grabbed some Lovenox and started anticoagulating myself. And it probably saved my life.
Yeah. I mean, you were able to have that option, and so many people didn't. And
correct.
knowing that I had seen so much going on, because again, when that checklist comes down, we were doing pulmonary embolism CAT scan studies. We were kind of dispensing them like Tic Tacs at one point, and that was that was before COVID. After COVID, it became even more so. And once they initiated the vaccines, over the next several months, the amount of stroke codes, oh my God. There was one point that I remember. Yeah. I said, this is not normal. We had three stroke codes. We only have one CAT scan machine in the hospital that I worked at. And so I had two people in the hallway, and we're doing, so for the listeners, you do a non-contrast head, and then you follow it by a CAT scan perfusion, followed by a CTA head and neck. So you're doing at least about 200 cc's of contrast, which lights all the arteries up.
You're glowing in the dark.
Yeah, and then we just keep cast, and so, but that could take up to 40 minutes. You have to get the correct IV access on the table, because these patients come in, they don't even have IVs sometimes. So like, you know, it's madness, and you just keep hearing the stroke go off, and I'm like, this shot is legitimately really feels like the clot shot.
So your observation fits exactly with what I've seen. It's prothrombogenic. It makes clots, whether it's pulmonary embolus or strokes or other clots that we're not aware of. But, you know, many of the people that die of sudden death, if they don't have an intrinsic heart problem, they often die of an embolus that blocks all the blood to an important place like the brain or the lungs. So you're 100% right. What you're witnessing is what I see and what many other of my colleagues have seen and talked about. But, you know, by and large, unless you're on a radio show like yours, you're not going to be able to say what you want, because I don't think they take me on YouTube, or they don't take me on a lot of these places, because I don't fit the far left agenda. I'm irrelevant.
You fly above the system, Doc, by being private and being able to run your own practice. And I mean, you know, that doesn't fully save you. We've watched how they've gone after Dr. McCullough, and
no, they've gone after me too. Listen,
you're still standing.
Oh Lord. Yeah, I am standing. I tried to arm the patients in this book by putting a patient section on what they need to do to pin down their doctor and questions they need to ask. Because you can't have somebody come in and stare at that computer and just blow you off and tell you, you know, check the box, you didn't have your COVID vaccine, get out of the office and things like this. So I just want to put it out there that in my book, there's a patient advocation section where everything you need to know and ask your doctor about rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, gout, psoriatic arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, scleroderma, myositis, vasculitis. I hope I'm not going too fast. But all of these diseases, I mean, I am an expert, and I've been doing this a very long time. And to know what I put in that book, your listeners, you guys out there, you know, from my hometown of Queens and every other borough, this is important because you need to be armed. And, you know, if the clock is ticking, you need to come ready with what you need to know and what you need the doctor to answer coherently on that question. And if not, the question comes up, what do? Then you go to administration and you start complaining, and you go to the media and you start complaining the stuff you did. You have to, because otherwise you'll never be heard.
Yeah. What they do is they put a big clamp on you and they don't let you speak at all. They try to destroy you in every facet. They hold the career over your head. You know, what happened with me is I was willing to take it and fight wherever it went. So I was supposed to have that big meeting pertaining to those PCR tests I was talking about earlier, and they fired me the day before because we held a protest, and somebody went up on the roof. I'm not even sure. It could have been the hospital themselves, but they dropped a banner that said, "We will not comply," off the rooftop, while there was media and hundreds of people there, and the CEO had just been there. And they decided and had fake written statements that it was me, and it took me 6 weeks to prove to them that I was out there when I finally got video of me standing there as the banner flew off the roof. And they were like, well,
you know, I don't see what you did wrong, even if you dropped it off the roof, right? There is freedom of speech, I thought.
Yeah,
you didn't destroy the roof.
What they charged me with was the original charge that they gave me was endangering patients and employee safety, trespassing. And I was like, if I trespassed and you have these fake written statements, I was like, have the police come and arrest me right now. I was like, I am not playing games here. But
well, you couldn't have trespassed if you worked there at the time.
Yeah, they say they said it's something about an off area that I wasn't authorized in my position to be in, which I mean, well, listen, should a CAT scan tech be on the roof? No. So I'll give them that. But it was crazy to have fake written statements from security. And I told them, I said, everyone's going to court over this, and they have to go on the stand and say that all of these statements that they wrote, they watched me leave at this time. I have time stamped videos, but they knew they were going to give me the job back. They just wanted to keep me out of the building. But this is what I'm saying. People try to do everything to destroy you. And if you're willing to take that hit and see where it goes, I mean, it's crazy. It was crazy. I had the point where I was supposed to meet with that chief, the chief medical officer, to discuss the whole entire implementation of the PCR for the unvaccinated. And I was like, I have to take this wherever it goes. I had recording devices ready. I was in touch with Project Veritas. It was getting serious.
You know, the sad thing about this is you had an 18-year career, clearly a well-decorated imaging tech, and now you're not able to help all those people, you know, get through the system as effectively as somebody who's had 8 hours of experience, who you got replaced by somebody with no experience. And that's just the way it goes. And it's really sad because the only people suffering are the patients that go to that hospital.
Yeah. And to go back now even further to earlier in our conversation, the last time I did get a physical last year, I went in and I was indeed asked to answer the question, am I a man? And that was I said to my doctor, and he was like, I have to ask these questions.
And actually, he doesn't. He does not have to ask anything. He's forced. He's, you know, listen, again, there's your proof. Socialized medicine. Are you a man? I mean, you could have answered, no, I'm a sofa.
You know what? I might do that this year. I might go with the route of the sofa. I'm a recliner.
Listen, We have a girl. Well, actually, put me down as a mattress, and anybody who wants 1-800 dial a mattress can call me, and they could, you know, test my mattress. But you know, There's a person somewhere within 100 miles of my practice right now who is under 12 years old, who's identified as a cat. And at the school this person goes to, they have a kitty litter in the girls' bathroom.
And this is verified, Doc. This is a verified thing, because a lot of people always go, this can't
Google
be
it.
Real. I never looked into that.
No. It's, you know what? There's not one. There's probably a dozen real ones and six fake ones. But yeah, no, I've read them. I've verified a couple of them. And, you know, I have a couple of staff of 25 years each. These are very intelligent people. And we formed a nice family here. And the people I'm surrounded with are very intelligent. And, you know, one of the things it says at the beginning of my book, which is written by an Ivy League trained nurse who I trained to be a rheumatology person, she said, you know, when I first met Dr. Soloway, I literally thought every word out of his mouth was a lie. After 6 weeks, anything he says is probably underestimated and absolutely all true, no matter how outrageous it may sound.
Yeah. So that means you have a long history of speaking truth without fear, as they say, and you've given yourself the wonderful, wonderful award of being well trusted. And I mean, I can't understate how important it is. I can't overstate actually how important it is that people do that, that you always speak truthfully and you don't bow to where they want you to bow, because that's where we lose ourselves. That's where we go in and we're asked if we are all of a sudden women. If you identify as a woman, maybe that would be up to you to bring up. I mean, that's where we're at. It's very strange how this has become a medical issue to the point that it has, where it used to be considered a dysmorphia, a mental issue. Now they've normalized it.
Listen, the government can do what they want. This is a mental issue. There's absolutely no, I mean, you don't need to be 100% smart to know that this is a mental issue, because you know why it's mental? It's a delusion, right? The definition of a delusion is a false, unshakable belief. If you're born with male genitalia and an XY chromosome, I think most people would say, oh, guess what? Congratulations, you had a boy. And then when the boy gets older and he tells you he's a sofa or a girl, he believes it. Okay, fine. I believe he believes it. But that's what a delusion is. So therefore, by definition, that person has mental illness. I'm sorry if the woke don't like that, but it's true. I mean, yeah. Too bad. I mean, Bruce Jenner, Kylie Jenner, give me a break. I don't care how famous they are. It's irrelevant.
Yeah. And I mean, to put this into context, this would be very similar if you went into a doctor's office and they said, how many people do you identify as? And if I said three and they all have voices, you would say that I have schizophrenia and different
Absolutely.
Personality disorders. But what we're trying to do now is say it's an aggression or a microaggression, not to talk to each of them. So right now you're talking to John, and then all of a sudden I start talking a little different, or I hear a voice in my head, and then you start addressing that person as Patrick. Yep. He just lives in my head. So, I mean, granted, these are problems that people do suffer from them, and at a certain age, okay, certain age, you wanna go by whatever you wanna be called, and I'll try if I personally will call you whatever you wanna be called, as long as I might mess up. But at the end of the day, I'm just trying to make you comfortable. You're still what you are, and you do have mental illness, and it's clear. I'm not judging you on it. I'm just saying what the textbooks say, because that's exactly what it is. But we've all been told that you hate people if you call it what it is, which is mental illness. And that's
you know,
very strange
again,
to me.
This is government overreach at the finest. I mean, it's just terrible. I have a handful of patients in my practice that identify as the opposite sex, okay? And I've known these people for, you know, 10 years each or more, and they had these sex change operations and so on and so forth. Now, these are people that I've known, right? And I respect them. I don't care what they identify as. I, you know, if they have joint pain, I take care of their joints. It's, you know, I'm not here to be your friend. I'm not here to be your enemy. I'm here to make sure that I give you the best medical care possible. And very rarely does the conversation come up. But I will tell you, the reason I brought this up is there's one thing that these five people have in common. They're all on at least 3 or 4 antipsychotic or antidepressant meds. There's no exception. So I started asking a handful of my colleagues that are in practice, did you see any of these transgenders in your practice? Yeah, I got one or two. I said, go check their chart. Or do you know off the top of your head, are they on like, you know, Abilify, Geodone, Zyprexa? Yeah, they are. In fact, they are. Are they on Celexa, Prozac, you know, and all this? Yeah, they are. Okay, you know, so I probably spoke to 5 or 6 docs. It's all the same.
Doc, thank you so much for joining us. It's Dr. Stephen Soloway. His book is Medical Politics, How to Protect Yourself from Bad Doctors, Insurance Companies, and Big Government. And tell them where they can follow you on social media.
Well, most important, the book needs to be obtained at badmedicinebook.net. And all the social media channels, such as Instagram and Facebook and whatnot, I'm listed as Dr. Soloway. I think they have me listed as the Miracle MD. Certainly on Instagram.
5 seconds.
Buy the book at badmedicinebook.net. Love you.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Doc.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.